Folks, time to talk many things Seattle sports. Seahawk camp is open. Mariners in the wild card hunt. Trade deadline is upon us. And who better to piece it all together? Our friend from ESPN 710 in Seattle, online 710sports.com. On Twitter, use the handle at TheBGustafson. Brandon Gustafson, before I welcome you in, let's open with what's really important. How's the pup? How's Maverick doing?
Yeah, Maverick's doing great. We actually just moved here early last week, so he's just kind of getting acclimated to everything. But he's doing great. He's a good boy, that's for sure.
He is a character. It's awesome. So beyond what the team and Jerry DePoto, the players, and other in the media have been saying, let's start with the first trade. The Mariners sending Kendall Graveman to Houston for basically a corner infield in Abraham Toro, a bullpen guy, Joe Smith. So when that move was first announced, what was your reaction?
It was surprising a little bit. I admittedly didn't know a whole lot about Abraham Toro. He's a guy who I've seen play here and there when the Mariners play the Astros. I knew that he was a younger guy. So my first reaction was just a little bit of surprise just because of how good Kendall Graveman has been this year, but also because I know how much he means to a lot of players on that team. So it was just a little bit of a surprise. And then when I kind of take a step back and look, it's like, okay, the Mariners are trading 2 months of Kendall Graveman and then a reliever who they just designated for assignment in Rafael Montero for another veteran struggling reliever in Joe Smith. So basically he and Montero kind of cancel each other out in a way in that deal. But then you get four plus years of club control with Abraham Toro, who's 24 years old. He's a natural third baseman, but really athletic, can kind of play across the diamond. They gave him his first start yesterday at second base. It's only the second time in his MLB career that he's played there. And I thought he played really well. He had a really nice diving double play late in the game yesterday. And he has two home runs, so obviously off to a good start. But, yeah, in terms of the initial reaction, it's just a little bit of a surprise. But because I thought that if they were going to be making some deals, I did think that the bullpen was an area that they could subtract from just because they've had so many surprise guys kind of come out of nowhere and perform really well. I just didn't necessarily think Graveman was going to be the guy. And then it was just the timing. You know, they played the really emotional game on Monday. They come back and win. They've been down 7-0 and come all the way back in the eighth and end up hitting the go-ahead grand slam. And it was just kind of a crazy game. And then to go from that to about, you know, 15, 16 hours later, knowing that this leader of this team kind of was going to the other dugout for two more games, it was a little bit of a shock, that's for sure.
And, of course, before we get into the move, which kind of alleviates some of that pain, what you wrote about, because in the aftermath, I think it was clear some players were, if not confused, a little bit ticked off because he had really performed well. So, like you posted on 710sports.com, the headline is the question, what did the GM, Mr. DePoto, say about why did this have to happen?
Yeah, it was interesting because one of the first comments that Jerry said was just that he was surprised that the deal took people by surprise. And I don't know if I necessarily agree with that sentiment just because, again, of how good Graveman has been. But when you get down to it and you kind of hear what he had to say, it makes a lot of sense with the direction of the team because he's made it clear throughout this whole year, really, when talking about the trade deadline, that they weren't really going to leverage this team's future for the sake of really going for something this year. And this is a deal that kind of proves that because you're getting a guy in Abraham Toro with so much club control, with defensive versatility that they really like and covet. This is a move that works out for them in the short term and the long term because he's going to play a lot for them this year and presumably for the next few years. One of the quotes that stood out from DePoto was, "We made that move because we had the opportunity to acquire a player we thought had everyday ability. Abraham Toro is roughly what we do with the Mariners." And what he meant by that is this is a team that over the last few years has gone out and acquired guys in their mid-20s who are kind of blocked positionally by some of the either higher-rated prospects or the guys at the big league club for their other teams. Mitch Haniger with the Diamondbacks was one example. Luis Torrens, J.P. Crawford in Philly, Ty France down in San Diego. Those are guys that didn't really have a clear shot at the big league club, even though they might have been ready or were closer to ready than their initial team might have thought. So it makes a lot of sense. I know that the emotional sting of it, both for players and fans, like, I totally understand that. And I get that the kind of gut-wrenching, like the first reaction to it isn't exactly ideal just because of how good Graveman has been and because he's kind of become this fan favorite and this guy who just has shut other teams down. But in terms of the short and the long term, it makes a lot of sense. Selling high on a reliever who only has 2 months left in his contract, and it's not a sure thing that he would have re-signed after this year anyways.
Well, we're talking with Brandon Gustafson, and not only are we getting information, I'd like to think we're getting some clarity, which brings us to something that's happened since I've been on the air. You mentioned you just submitted your story. What could you tell us now about the acquisition of Diego Castillo from Tampa, who, if you followed him over his 4 years, this is a legit bullpen guy. He's got a live arm.
Yeah, he's nasty, and he's got live stuff. He's got he's a sinker guy in the mid to high 90s. Doesn't generate a ton of spin with it, but still gets a lot of movement. Goes right after guys, misses a lot of bats, generates weak contact. He's been a really, really underrated reliever, and I think part of that is just because seemingly every year Tampa Bay has some starter reliever that just kind of churns out results that nobody's ever heard of. So he's just kind of flown under the radar down there in Tampa Bay. But, I mean, realistically, that's your Kendall Graveman replacement in some ways, pairing Diego Castillo with Paul Sewald to be the two go-to late-inning options. And unlike Kendall Graveman, who's 30 years old, had Tommy John surgery, and is a pending free agent, Diego Castillo is 27 years old and is signed through the 2024 season. So again, that's another deal that helps this team in the short term this year as they try to end that playoff drought, but also for the next few years. This is a guy that could be either a closer or just a go-to stopper reliever if that's the way that the Mariners want to operate. I think he has 14 saves for the Rays this year. He has a career ERA under 3. He has postseason experience over the last few years for Tampa Bay. He pitched pretty well in the divisional series and I think in the championship series against the Astros last year. So, yeah, this is somebody who comes in with a lot of intrigue and is presumably going to be going into a very high-leverage role right away. So whether that's going to take the sting away from people for losing Kendall Graveman, I have no idea, but this is a top arm that'll be around presumably for a few years. So that's at least exciting.
Yeah. For folks who aren't familiar with him, like you said, he's a K-man. He's going to come in and get guys to miss. You know, one thing you and I haven't talked about with the success of the bullpen, you know, they've had some injuries in the staff. Right now you got Dunn and Sheffield on the shelf. Their pitching coach, you know, who's a really young guy. He's only 33. He came through their system. How about the job Pete Woodworth has done? You know, it's just his second season at the major league level.
Yeah, Woodworth is a guy who is talked about in very, very high regard from coaches to players. One of the interesting things was in 2019, the AA Arkansas roster was just loaded with guys that you knew were going to be up in the big league club in the very near future, especially with the pitchers. That Justin Dunn, Justice Sheffield, Logan Gilbert was there. There were a few other guys as well in terms of like relievers and players like that. And they had nothing but good things to say about the guy they call Woody. And as you mentioned, he's a younger guy, but seems like that staff just really listens to what he has to say. I know this is a very statistically driven organization in terms of the analytics and advanced metrics and stuff like that. And it sounds like he's just super bought into that and is able to kind of convey what the team is wanting these guys to do in a good way. And yeah, I mean, having a young guy be able to come in and kind of be able to control the room with both mix of veteran pitchers, like a guy like Marco Gonzalez, or obviously before he was traded, a Kendall Graveman, but also these young guys who are up there making their MLB debuts or haven't done a ton of MLB experience, like the Justin Dunns and Justice Sheffields. He's done a really nice job, and he deserves a lot of credit for the way that this staff has operated, especially the bullpen, which has been such a strength of this team this year.
Yeah, you know, we've talked about Paul Sewald and, you know, how he basically had a minor league deal coming over from the Mets, got that save Monday and that wild win against Houston. So what's the word? I mean, with Castillo coming in, who they have, would I be accurate in thinking? Is he officially the closer, or are we still working on those details?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because at the beginning of the year, it didn't really seem like the Mariners had what you would call like a traditional just closer role. Some teams have kind of abandoned that in terms of like, okay, this is the biggest moment and it's in the seventh inning or the eighth inning. We're going to our best guy. We saw Kendall Graveman do that a lot early on. But you'd think that right now it's going to be Sewald and Diego Castillo. And I know that Kendall Graveman's overall numbers for the whole year have been really, really good. But honestly, since Paul Sewald made his Mariners debut in, I think it was early, mid-May, he's been the team's best reliever. He's been better than Kendall Graveman has been since the two have been on the same pitching staff. And Graveman did miss some time because of the COVID IL, but when Graveman got back and after a few kind of uncharacteristic outings and was getting back on track, Sewald was still the better pitcher. He's been really, really good for them. Comes in, kind of knows what he's going to do. He's going to throw sliders at you until you do something with them, and it's pretty fun to watch, actually. But yeah, I don't know if it's something where Scott Service is going to just be like, okay, Sewald, you're the ninth inning guy. Castillo, you're the eighth inning guy. A lot of how he's operated this bullpen this year has just been a feel thing. I mean, going back to that game on Monday, you and I have talked briefly about here. Kendall Graveman went in the eighth inning when they were down one or two runs. So a lot of it is just a feel thing. I think that they make it clear who's available on a given day, but I don't know if they necessarily have a set inning or a set role for a lot of those guys. But between Sewald and Castillo, those are two guys that you'd be very comfortable with giving the ball to in those last few innings.
A couple final thoughts for Brandon Gustafson, ESPN 710 in Seattle. We know the Seahawks have broke camp. And just one thing, I happen to just be watching some film. For the first time in a decade, no K.J. Wright. I mean, with Bobby Wags kind of a mainstay on the defense during the most successful decade in the history of the franchise. So just how odd is it not seeing him out there? And, you know, how well-suited are they at the position without him, assuming he doesn't come back?
Yeah, Bobby Wagner's made it clear he wants him back. he wants his buddy back, and obviously not a whole lot of people are going to know the Seahawks defense better than K.J. Wright, who's been with the club since 2011. They're in decent shape. Jordan Brooks is going to be the starting weak side linebacker. He was the team's first-round draft pick last year, so he's going to be playing most of those snaps alongside Bobby Wagner. I know they want to play more nickel this year. They did definitely go that route last year. So maybe not as much three linebacker sets as we've seen over the last few years. But in terms of a strong side linebacker, that third spot, they have a few options. The two main guys to watch are Cody Barton, who was a third-round pick back in 2019. He's had some starting experience filling in here and there, come in when some guys need a breather or get injured and things like that. But the other guy is their second-round pick last year, Daryl Taylor, who was actually drafted as a defensive end, but he played a 3-4 outside linebacker in college at Tennessee. He didn't get to play last year in his true rookie season because of a shin injury. He just never was able to get healthy, but he's healthy now. He got really rave reviews at rookie minicamp. He's healthy. He's a bigger guy, and they had a lot of success at that strong side linebacker spot with a guy who could also rush the passer a few years back, Bruce Irvin. In his first stint with the Seahawks, that was kind of his role, playing that strong side spot. And then on obvious passing downs, when they did go to those nickel spots, he could come down and rush the passer off of the edge. It sounds like Daryl Taylor's going to get the first crack at that starting job. But yeah, those are the two guys to really watch there. But K.J. Wright's obviously still looming out there. He'd be able to get in there and not miss a beat just because of his knowledge of the defense. So it'll be interesting to see what they do. But they do have some options there. They have decent depth at linebacker.
All right, well, obviously they're just getting started. Really wanted to focus on the Mariners. Folks, he's Brandon Gustafson on Twitter. It's at TheBGustafson. Check out his work. Go online to 710sports.com. Brandon, you always enhance our show with your insight and knowledge. Please say hello to Maverick for me, and you have yourself a good one. We'll catch up soon, and always much appreciate your time.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for having me on. Take care.
All right, take it easy. There you go.